He starts this year going for a record-breaking 8th World Championship. He has been put under immense pressure by Max Verstappen and Red Bull here tonight. Sir Lewis Hamilton, as he is now, crosses the line and wins the Bahrain Grand Prix.
That was the sound of one of the biggest athletes on the planet, Lewis Hamilton, dominating one of the biggest sports on the planet, Formula One racing. It's a sport that has been wildly popular overseas for decades, but suddenly seems to be having a real moment stateside. And I, for one, am extremely out of the loop. So today, Ryan McGee is here to hold my hand and take the wheel as he gets all of us up to speed. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Friday, June 18th. This is ESPN Daily. Ryan McGee, I have brought you here today because I have a bad case of FOMO, and it's a particular strain of FOMO. It is Formula One FOMO, F1 FOMO, high-grade FOMO, because it feels like I just woke up one day and all of a sudden, like all these people on sports Twitter and all of my friends, they're suddenly really into Formula One racing, and I just feel left out. So you are our czar of motorsports. I hope you can get me up to speed.
I've been trying to tell you all these guys are cool and these cars are awesome for 25 years.
Ryan McGee has covered motorsports for decades, and he has been trying to get idiots like me to pay attention to Formula One for just as long.
So welcome aboard is what I have to say to anyone who has suddenly discovered Formula One, because I discovered it at a young age, and I'm bring them all in, man. I'm not arrogant guy that doesn't want the club to get bigger. I want everybody to watch.
Yeah, you don't want to be the hipster that is stopping people behind the velvet rope. You don't want to be a soccer guy.
If I ask you what a red card is, don't act like I've offended you because it's the world's game. If you ask me what a red flag is, I will explain it to you. And again, I'm spreading the gospel, man. So bring it on.
All right. So here we are at the Church of Formula One. And I just want to understand, why has this congregation gotten so big so suddenly? What is behind all this popularity now?
Well, I think, in all honesty, the perception for those of us who live in North America and in the United States of America is that suddenly this sport has popped up and suddenly it's popular. But the reality is, and I joke about, you know, soccer, Formula One is the soccer of motorsports. You know, it sometimes fails to gain traction mainstream in the United States. I mean, it always has failed to gain traction mainstream in the United States. But globally, it's an obsession. And it's been that way forever, and it breaks down language barriers. I once sat at Lake Como and had a 30-minute conversation with a 500-year-old Italian man that did not speak any English, and I spoke no Italian, and yet we had an entire conversation about the fact that Sebastian Vettel and his contract at Ferrari, and I realized, soccer's the world game, F1 is the world's motorsport.
You've dropped so many nouns that not only have made me imagine you as this George Clooney type figure, like boating along Lake Como.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But also the mystique of all of this. I mean, there is a cinematic aspect to this. And I refer to the fact that, like, there's this Netflix show that people are watching that apparently is super popular that everyone's telling me that I should watch here. Like, this seems to be having a moment.
Drive to Survive on Netflix has been a phenomenon. And it, to the point that, I mean, Zach Brown, who is, you know, the man who runs McLaren, one of the greatest, you know, motorsports organizations in the history of cars, he said it's interesting because they had to kind of beg all the Formula One people who weren't normally, you know, they didn't really like the doors opened and they don't want you to behind the rope, but they had to beg for access. And Formula One went to the teams and begged for access. And now what's happening is IndyCar is like, why aren't we doing something like this? And NASCAR is like, why aren't we doing something like this? Drag racing, why aren't we doing something like this? And so it's hard to overstate what that show has done, and not to just brag about where we work, but it also has helped that, you know, ESPN has gotten behind some promotion.
And what I need here now mostly, Ryan, is just like a crash course in Formula 101, let's say, because I know nothing, big picture. I need to understand the basics here. How does F1 racing work? Like the season, the venues, just the mechanics, and I guess on that, pun intended in part, what is Formula One?
It is the world's most expensive traveling circus. You have 10 teams. Each team has two cars. They have two drivers. They're contracted by employees. They have sponsors, many that you've heard of and many that you haven't, but if you lived overseas, you absolutely would have heard of that. Just the money that courses through this. And so if you're familiar with stock car racing or IndyCar racing, these are sophisticated machines. What Formula One is doing compared to what they're doing is like something, some technology the aliens are supposed to bring us 300 years from now. I mean, it's all the way down to the lubricants that go into the cars. I'm not just talking about the fuel. I'm talking about the individual synthesized lubricants that are used for every single tiny moving part in these race cars. And so, yes, you see a car with big tires and wings like you see an IndyCar, but what they're doing is so technologically advanced, it's part of the reason that they've always been so secretive. And it's part of the reason that we haven't gotten to know the team principals and the mechanics and the drivers all that well, because it's so secretive. But it's the most sophisticated technology you can think of. These are fighter jets, stealth fighter jets that just happen to be stuck on the ground.
Like, how fast are we talking here in terms of, if I'm watching this thing, what kind of speeds are we looking at?
Well, they race entirely on road courses and street courses. So they're going left to right, as opposed to, you know, a stock car races at Talladega or Daytona, where they've got a flat straightaway, you know, that's just half a mile, three quarters of a mile long.
Right.
Or in Indianapolis, where it's just flat and fast. But these cars will pop over 200 miles per hour without even thinking about it.
And when you say, like, street races, like, these are the actual literal streets. Like, for instance, I'll throw a proper name out that I've heard of in connection to F1, like the Monaco Grand Prix. And again, I'm envisioning so much aristocracy money.
You're also thinking Iron Man 2.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
You're thinking Herbie.
Mm-hmm.
And you're thinking Grand Prix with James Garner, which, by the way, the first 15 minutes of Grand Prix, which were filmed during an actual Monaco Grand Prix in the 1960s, the first 15 minutes of that movie, the greatest motorsports movie ever made. You can forget the other 2.5 hours. It was so good they won an Oscar for special effects before there were real special effects. But yes, these are street and road courses. And you do have street courses in Monaco, in a place like Singapore, in streets, in cities. But then there are also specially built road courses. And I'm talking about some of the most famous racetracks in the world. You know, when they race in France, they've been racing there since 1908. When they go to Spa in Belgium, when they go to Silverstone in England, and then there's brand new racetracks. You know, when they go to COTA, the Circuit of the Americas in the United States outside of Austin, that track is less than 10 years old. And when they go to Singapore, that's a brand new street course. Whenever they go to the Middle East, which they're going to all the time now, these are brand new racetracks that were built just in the hope that they would lure Formula One into their nations. And a lot of times, it's underwritten, you know, by the governments, and that's how important Formula One is to promote their nation. It gives you instant credibility globally when you host this event, like hosting an Olympics.
So I'm going to overlook the part where you just entirely erased the Fast and the Furious family of movies from your power rankings of films.
They don't race. No, they're not racing anywhere. They used to race illegally in the street in those movies, and I love them. I drive my wife crazy. I love them all. Wait. Now what they're doing is, they're fighting crime, and I think the next one's going to be in space. So they're not really racing movies.
You do raise a good point as a purist as racing films are concerned. So the money involved in all of this, Ryan, like, how much are we talking here? Like, how would you put dollar figures? How would you characterize just the sheer largesse involved in this enterprise?
So ESPN, the magazine, we used to do every year, we'd do like the world's richest athletes. And every year I would get this confused call from my editor going, who the hell is Michael Schumacher?
Michael Schumacher gets his seventh Formula One World Championship this year. He has utterly dominated the championship, won it well before the end of the season.
You expect Jordan, and you expect Shaq, and you expect, you know, Kobe. You expect to see, you know, baseball players and these guys. And there's Schumacher sitting in the top five. You know, Lewis Hamilton made $55 million last year.
Lewis Lewis Hamilton wins the British Grand Prix. A fantastic performance, a mesmerizing drive.
You know, he's in the top 10. And so the amount of money these teams are spending, but to answer your question, years ago it was $200 million a year. Now, because it had gotten so out of control, there has been a salary cap, a spending cap, and that's down to about $145 million now, which is down from $175 million not so long ago. That's a lot of money, man. You're just talking about two guys driving two race cars, and they're spending $145 million, and they don't think that's enough.
So these cars that are nine-figure-plus investments, where are they headed? Because these races move all over the world, right? How many races even are there?
Typically in a schedule, and with COVID, it's fluctuated over the last couple of years, but it's typically in the two dozen races a year, usually in the 20 race a year range. And they're literally traveling the world. Their goal is to race on as many continents as possible. And, you know, their goal is to infiltrate areas of the map that they've never been before. The goal is to race in Asia. The goal is to race somewhere in Africa, to race in Europe, certainly to race in North America, in South America, in Brazil. The goal is to race in Australia. The goal is to race on every continent you can. If they could get to Antarctica, they'd do it.
That does feel like a Fast and the Furious 15
sequel. That was like two ago, right? With the submarine that popped up out of the ice.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. No, they're ahead of the curve, always. The drivers, who are they? Where do they come from? In terms of what makes a Michael Schumacher, for instance, like what makes a great driver great?
Well, there's a ladder. And the ladder is, I mean, it's the Formula Racing ladder, and it starts in karts. And just so you know, I'm not talking about going down to Myrtle Beach and racing, you know, in a go-kart, you know, with your buddies at night. I'm talking about this is karting. This is where all of the greats.
A lot less tie-dye.
Yeah, exactly. A lot less tie-dye, and there's no, you don't have to race through the clown's mouth. That'll be Fast and the Furious 12. But what these guys, men and women, they start in this formula ladder, and the hope is that you catch the eye of someone. It's a farm system. I mean, it's not as organized as like a baseball farm system, but that's essentially what it is.
And as success goes then, how much of this is the team versus the car versus the driver then, if we're just to speak bluntly in terms of what matters the most?
Well, you got to be with a good team. The history of Formula One has been written. And if you look at, you know, just look at the results this year, you know, guess what? Mercedes and Red Bull have won all the races. And what that tells you is if you want to win races, you probably need to be with those two. And it's not different than a lot of other sports when you think about it. You know, if you want to win, you probably want to be on this roster as opposed to that roster, or with this organization as opposed to that organization. But in motorsports, there's definitely an advantage. But it fluctuates. Listen, Red Bull Racing could not get out of its own way when it first got into the sport. And then they hit on something. And they've been good ever since. Ferrari dominated this sport for decades. Right now, they can't seem to get out of their own way. But, you know, I also cover college football. And whether it was the old bowl system or whether it was the BCS or whether it's the college football playoff, you know what? The same 15 schools, for the most part, are the ones playing for a national championship. And motorsports is no different than that.
All right, Ryan, after the break, I want you to take me through what we should be watching for as this 2021 F1 season hits high gear.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
So, Ryan, I have this very clear sense that Formula One has this European flair. It is wildly popular over there. I have this image of drivers as these, like, you know, cosmopolitan international celebrities who would be, like, character actors in a James Bond movie. They'd be like around the poker table in Monaco somewhere. But what is it that makes this sport such a massive hit internationally, do you think?
Well, first of all, everything you just said is 100% accurate. So don't let anyone tell you that it's not. But the difference is that, you know, when I started covering Formula One 25 years ago, there were personalities in the paddock. We just couldn't get to them. Lewis Hamilton has been a really interesting case because, in my mind, he's still the young guy. The reality is, you know, he's been doing this now for, gosh, for a decade and a half. But when he first came along, we weren't allowed to get to him. And so we didn't know. We thought, well, here's just another, you know, robot Formula One driver. But what we've learned now is he's a phenomenal person. And the rivalries and the soap opera, even when the races weren't great, the soap opera of the silly season of, was this guy going to quit this team and go to that team? Or is this guy going to quit this team because he's mad because his team told him to get out of the way and let the other guy win for the championship? The drama of it, the soap opera of it from Monday to Saturday was better than the racing on Sunday. And so there's all the soap opera part of it is great. And plus there's that part of they're just cool. You know, James Bond's awesome. And so these guys are James Bond. And every time they go to work on Sunday, they could die. And so that's not being overdramatic. That's the fact of it. And so I think that's why it's always appealed to people, even when we didn't know these guys.
Yeah, the friends of mine, Ryan, who have fallen in love with this sport, I want to be clear about this too. They're so often not sports fans otherwise. They've just become obsessed with all of these characters. And so I want to return to Lewis Hamilton here because that dude I have heard of, but I could not tell you very much about him. So who is Lewis Hamilton? How would you describe exactly how good he is?
He's the greatest there's ever been.
Lewis Hamilton wins! Surely the first of many for Lewis Hamilton. The world is at his feet.
He's that rarity that we all heard about him when he was a kid. He's going to be the greatest. And we're like, okay, yeah, whatever. We've already heard of this. No, he is the greatest.
Hamilton has crossed the line. There he is.
What a drive. What a megastar we've got on our hands with Lewis Hamilton.
He's rewriting the book of what is possible in Formula One.
He holds nearly 40 career Formula One records. And we talk about rewriting the record book. He literally has rewritten the record book. I mean, it's pages after page after page. But the big one is that all of us who think that we know a little bit about motorsports believed that no one would ever reach, let alone surpass, Michael Schumacher's record of 7 Formula One World Championships. And, you know, Lewis Hamilton's still a young guy, and he has tied the record at 7.
Now he finds himself alongside Michael Schumacher as top in the record books. The world championship record is equaled. Lewis Hamilton wins the Turkish Grand Prix and is a 7-time champion of the world.
He is in the thick of another Formula One World Championship fight this year. He's going to break the record that all of us believed couldn't be broken. He's that rarity that, you know, we all cover different sports, and we all hear about the kid who's 16, 17 years old, and he's going to change the sport forever, and he's a can't miss. Well, I first heard Lewis Hamilton when he was 10 years old, and I'm telling you right now, I hear about young race car drivers all the time. I hear about them from their dads. I hear about them from YouTube. You know, so it's just like high school, you know, football recruits. Everybody stops me in the grocery store. My son's going to play for Ohio State. And I'm like, no, he's not. Because I hear about this all the time. And when I first heard about Lewis Hamilton, I'm like, okay, yeah, we'll see. And if I'm being 100% honest, I didn't know if he would ever be given a fair shake because he was black.
And just to be clear, Ryan, where is Lewis Hamilton from?
He comes from England. And he comes from the British karting racing ladder. And he, at 10 years old, became the youngest ever British karting national champion. And there's a famous story where he walked up to the head of Williams Racing, you know, the great British racing team, Formula One team, and said, I'm Lewis Hamilton, I'm 10 years old, and one day I'm going to drive your race cars. Okay, kid, that sounds great. And, you know, decade later, he's a world champion for that team. One of the greatest interviews I've ever done, and it had nothing to do with my interviewing skills, it was just the answers that were coming back to me, was at the U.S. Grand Prix in 2019 when he was on the verge of winning that seventh championship. And him being so open and honest with me about his life and his career and the color of his skin and his desire to help change the world and make it a better place.
What's really important is to celebrate our individuality and the fact that we're unique. We're all unique, and I'm very, very privileged to be to have my own uniqueness here in the sport, being the only black family in the sport. But what's really great is over the time I've seen more and more people of color, minorities coming to the races in the different countries that we're going to.
This is before George Floyd, right? Mm. This is before Black Lives Matter became, you know, this wave across the world that he helped ignite. And he already felt that way long before the rest of us caught up to him. And now, thankfully, we have.
Tell me about the racial dynamics historically in Formula One.
There aren't any. There are none. And you know, anyone with a darker shade of skin came from South America. But the answer is there's no history there to tell. Lewis Hamilton has written all of it. And I'm not just talking about race car drivers. I'm talking about executives, and I'm talking about mechanics, and I'm talking about guys going over the wall for pit stops. I'm even talking about just in the ladder of racing, of youngsters trying to make it into the sport. It just wasn't there. And this is certainly not an exclusive Formula One story, but in Formula One, it always seemed a little more impossible than it did in any other form of racing. And he's done it. And he has said he will be so disappointed if he doesn't look back 10 years from now and he watches a Formula One race and doesn't see more faces like his, or doesn't see any faces like his, if he doesn't have the effect that he wants to have, then he's going to always feel like he didn't do everything he could have.
Okay, so Lewis Hamilton, very much the biggest star in the sport. But I do want to ask about this beef, and I think it's safe to call it an intra-paddock beef, Ryan, between Lewis Hamilton and his teammate with Mercedes, Valtteri Bottas. What's the deal there?
Okay, first of all, that term intra-paddock, I've never written that, and I'm totally using it now. So thank you.
It is my contribution.
I will credit you kindly and warmly every time I use it. But no, so this is a common issue with Formula One racing, which is you have a number one driver. And sometimes that's spoken very clearly, and sometimes it's just implied. But when you are the number two driver, what that means is the number one driver, yes, he's going to get most of the... And the number one driver for most teams is just whoever three or four races in is your best chance to win a championship, or your best, you know, chance to finish on the podium every week. And so it has happened multiple times, many times over the years in individual races, certainly in finales, where a teammate that's running first and has the teammate running second or behind him or even fifth or sixth but just needs the points to win a championship, hey, pull over. And it's called team orders is the phrase. Mm. And it is a dirty phrase in motorsports, but it's also a common phrase. And it's really only common in Formula One. You know, I can count the times that it's happened that I know of in NASCAR or IndyCar or maybe once or twice in my entire career. Formula One happens all the time. And so that's where that tension comes from. And listen, every race car driver thinks they can win every race. And they all think there's reasons they're not doing it. He's got a better car than I do. His crew chief or head mechanic's better than mine is. He has more money than I do. He got better tires than I did today. There's always a reason. And that's the fire that makes those guys great. And so for Valtteri Bottas, it keeps him awake at night. And but you know, he's the number two guy, and the hope is one day he'll be the number one guy. But I have bad news. Lewis Hamilton's his teammate, and Lewis Hamilton's not just the number one guy there, he's the number one guy of all time.
So as the season rolls on here, Ryan, beyond the sheer unadulterated dominance of Lewis Hamilton, what storylines are you paying attention to? What should we be paying attention to?
Well, it's the fact that it hasn't been sheer unadulterated dominance this year for the first time in forever. Mm. You know, he has a rival. And over the last several years, and this is part of what's made this soap opera so great, was because Red Bull Racing, who was being dominated by Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton just a few years ago, they've chipped away and chipped away and chipped away. And now We're sitting six races in. Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton have won three races, and Red Bull Racing, with primarily Max Verstappen, has won three races. And so Max Verstappen, so here's where I am in my career, Pablo Astorias. I have been covering these guys, and I also covered their dads.
Oh, man.
And Max Verstappen's father, Jos Verstappen, was a racer when I first started covering motorsports in the 90s. And it was a guy that always had to play second fiddle to the superstars. And so Max has been around. He's been in his paddock since he was born. He is not intimidated by Lewis Hamilton. He's only 23 years old. And so I really believe six races in, we have a genuine title fight. And it's been a while since Hamilton was stuck in one of those. And I'm really, really curious to see how all this shakes out.
So, in your honor, I am pulling up my very freshly bookmarked Formula One schedule webpage, Ryan McGee. And I see that this weekend, we're going to France, the French Grand Prix. I noticed your pronunciation there. I want to make sure that I become ever more aristocratic as I venture deeper into this very popular sport. What should I know about the French Grand Prix?
They've only been holding it since 1906. So a little bit of history there. When most people still didn't have cars, they were running this race. But what's interesting about this race is, and I'm putting this in air quotes, Lewis Hamilton has only won this race twice.
Mm.
And for him, that's a struggle. If he's going to make a statement, and if he's going to let Max Verstappen know that he can't knock the king off the throne quite yet, then this is the place that he's going to do it. This is a classic race, and there will literally be people at the crack of dawn sitting on hillsides in the French countryside drinking champagne, watching Ferraris and Mercedes and McLarens run through the countryside, and I can't think of anything more Formula One than that.
Just as God intended, Ryan.
That's right. And no icebergs or submarines or Toyota Supers involved.
Ryan McGee, the high priest of Formula One, I thank you as always for being at the very top of the ESPN Daily Grid.
Thank you, Pablo Astori.
All right, coming up, the newest federal holiday in America and what it means in sports.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Here's another story I want you to know. This Saturday, June 19th, it marks one of the most significant days in all of American history, a day that is getting more attention that has been long overdue. Because yesterday, Juneteenth, was officially recognized as a federal holiday for the first time in the United States, and it marks the day that news of the 1863 Emancipation Proclamation belatedly made it to Southeast Texas a full 2 years later. In 1865, we asked our friend Mark Spears of The Undefeated to talk to us about Juneteenth in sports and in culture and in his life. Mark, Juneteenth is tomorrow. What has this day meant to you personally, writ large? How has this been a thing that has mattered to you in your life?
Wow. How much time do you have? When I was a kid growing up in San Jose, California, at that time, San Jose, it was and still is one of the most diverse cities in the country. So Juneteenth in San Jose, they would have a festival every year at the Santa Clara County Fairgrounds. And it was cool, man. I always looked forward to it. And it was like a, you know, like a 2-day festival, Saturday and Sunday. And they'd have all these amazing food booths. And, you know, my mom's side of family is from New Orleans. So I'm looking forward to Louisiana food booth, you know, seeing if somebody has some gumbo or something like that. And then you'd have the Texas and people in the Kansas City, like folks with barbecue. And then you'd have the soul food people. And you had like the fried fish people. And I'm trying to taste all of it, right? And seeing people in droves that look like me was beautiful. Hearing music, those festivals, man, like I'd be there all day, man. I just loved it. And it was sad when it was over because that was just like the one day time of the year where the city embraced you, where the city embraced Blackness.
So how have you seen this holiday go from the territory of a local festival, something that the community knew and obviously cared deeply about, to now something that is so much more nationally recognized, now officially celebrated? It's now this thing, Mark. How stark is that difference?
Well, Black folks always knew about it. It's just everybody else did it.
Yes.
Like, it ain't new to us. Like, Juneteenth is a celebration, but the origin of it is painful.
Yeah.
And so I hope in that way, like, it is reflected. It's like this country just has the so much beauty in it that hopefully people will accept just the education of other people's backgrounds.
To look at what the NBA is going to be doing on Saturday, Mark, I know employees, they're getting paid time off today, Friday. That is part of this. I also know beyond like the various sort of celebration marketing related things that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is becoming a figure of sort of formal note in this way, because there is this Kareem Abdul-Jabbar Social Justice Champion Award that is just starting, that they're going to announce before Game 4 of the Eastern Conference Finals next week. I know that players are going to be invited to watch this History Channel doc that Kareem is making called Fight the Power about social movements. The idea that at the very least, this is now an occasion to listen to somebody like Kareem. What does that signify to you? Because this was not a role that he had held in such an official way before.
No, it's a dope award. Hopefully the other leagues will follow. I was on the jump with Kareem earlier this week, and he seemed really proud of it.
Yeah.
And that was beautiful to see. Like, he brought it up himself about the, like, you could tell he's excited about this award. And there's so much depth to Kareem. It's so much larger than basketball. With everything that he's done off the court, I think if you could ask him, like, would he rather this or something be named, like, a trophy for MVP of something?
Yeah, like an all-star game award or something like that.
Yeah, I think he'd take this in a heartbeat over any award. I'm not going to be a grumpy old man about Juneteenth being named a national holiday. I'm happy about it. Obviously, there's a lot of Black folks that ain't happy with, you know, Black History Month being 28 days. Well, look, now we got 29. At Martin Luther King, we got 30. You know what I mean? Let's go. Find something else. Let's get another holiday. Obama's birthday. I don't know. I don't want to sound like a broken record on it, but I do think that it's important to celebrate all the victories. And there are bigger things that need to happen for Black people than a Juneteenth holiday. But at least those things seem to be a work in progress instead of not being in anything. So let's celebrate Juneteenth, educate people on this holiday, and hopefully that will inspire them to learn more about African American history in the process. Sounds good to me, right? Yeah. Happy Juneteenth.
Mark Spears, happy Juneteenth, man.
Thanks, brother.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Steve Martin, Ryan Antel, Andy Tennant, Eve Tro, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vail. Special thanks this week to Mike Philbrick, Eric Lunston, Lori Haresh, Elaine Tang, Andres Soto, Christian Gardner, Max Brodsky, Dave Cironic, Jim Briggs, and Jackson Ugelow. And happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. I'll talk to you Monday.